Earlier this month, City Council in Kansas City, Missouri, voted unanimously to make riding the bus free. It's a move that the head of the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority has been advocating for, well, since forever, since before anyone really thought it could happen. His name is Robbie Mackinnon, and he's known in transit circles for being passionate in his convictions and unconventional in his style. But what may have sounded like a radical idea back then, free bus rides for all, is now set to happen in real life. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. We're listening back to a conversation we had with Robbie at the end of the summer. Back then, the idea was just starting to get traction. We'd invited Robbie on the show to share his life story, and as you will hear, he did not always relish that assignment. Hi, Robbie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. The public discussion may be new, but I do understand you've been talking about this for a while.
Oh, absolutely. Systematically and methodically, we've been working toward this. So this isn't just some blind guy who has an idea to make transit free. No, this is a zero-fare project that we've started from the standpoint of making transit free for our veterans. We've had over 2 million rides. Transit fare zero for our high school kids, North Kansas City, Hickman, and Center. We've had over 60,000 rides, and we just started it at the end of the semester. Now North Kansas City School District has jumped into that. And we recently just started our Opportunity Pass program, which allows safety net providers. We have about 11 right now with the Health Forward Foundation. And what we've done is offer zero fare to those folks, too. So you're slowly creeping up on 25% of the ridership right now in Kansas City that is getting zero fare, and that's a good place to be, and it allows us to slowly test the process to see how it works, work out some of the bugs, and I'm very happy with how it's going.
When you say it's a good place to be, it's not everyone who runs an organization who would be pleased to say that more and more people are receiving services free of charge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, but Ride KC, the ATA, we're not in a profit business. Okay, we're trying to develop social capital, social development, not just like economic development. Okay, and that is the point. Your job at the ATA is to help people. Okay, and what I tell our staff all the time is, you know what? This is that one thing. Public transit is that one thing that connects healthcare, job access, education, you name it. It has a connection to all of it, even all the way to economic development in that. So this is that one job when you can affect more people's lives in a day than most people get to do in a lifetime. What are you going to do with that?
Yeah, well, okay, that's a great question. That is when you think of transit that way, your job is a really big job. What philosophically guides you in doing that job?
Well, it's a philosophic, I guess, reason to say that this is about people, okay? We need to stop looking at, and this is nationally from a transit agency wide, we need to stop thinking about your bus operations as inanimate objects, as aluminum and rubber and a stop and those kind of things, and think about what you're there for. You're there to help people. And if you can look at that, then somebody from maintenance to somebody in the C-suite, everybody can wrap their head around that. Okay, we're here to help people and change people's lives. And that concept, coming at it from a social optic rather than a business optic, I think just gives us all perspective.
When you talk about thinking of transit in terms of aluminum and rubber, for example, can you explain to me a little more what it is you're talking about? Maybe is there sort of like a history in thinking about transit that is more material driven or, I guess like map driven or something like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I mean, transit agencies around the country have gotten, they're in that model, that old school model, if you will, of, hey, we make buggy whips, but we're the best buggy whip company in the nation. You know what I mean? What difference does that make now? Okay, if your model doesn't change and you don't change with the environment you're in, then if we just stay the way we were, we'd be the best blockbuster ever, right? And what would be the point of that?
Well, so tell me what the new model looks like to you going forward, not even just right now, but looking ahead 10, 20 years. What is the model?
The new model is what we need to stop doing, and not just in public transit, but in everything. We need to stop pitting one thing against another. We're sitting in a region where everybody doesn't want anybody playing in their sandbox. Okay, so everything gets piecemealed together, and that's the way we operate. Okay,
can you explain what you mean? What's against what here in town?
Well, everybody wants to pit like a streetcar versus bus, bus versus Uber, Uber versus scooter, that kind of thing. When it comes to public transit, there's
cars versus bicycles.
Well, you know, cars are out of this. All right,
right.
I'm done.
Okay.
But from a public transit standpoint, it's not about whether somebody takes a bus or a streetcar or a scooter. You, as a transit authority, need to think bigger than that. There's room in the tent for everybody, and your customer, i.e. you, Gina, you just want access and options. Okay, if we give you access and options, you don't care how the sausage is being made. You just want it. You know what I mean?
I care a little because I'm a journalist, but point taken.
Fair. But if you can get up and then you are in control of your public transit experience, meaning I want to go from here to here, and then all of a sudden you're looking at an app or whatever that you then get the options for you to use, why am I going to waste taxpayer money to try and get you to ride a bus instead of a streetcar? And why would the streetcar want to do that to get you to ride that instead of this? You get what I'm trying to say? It's a zero-sum game, and it's silly, okay? Get on board with everybody. Give our customers the options and access that they need, and then they're more apt to use public transit.
Was there a time when the idea of free ridership felt to you like it was something you cared about, but maybe there was a pie-in-the-sky kind of aspect to it?
Well, of course. I mean, I would go, to national conventions for APTA or whatever that may be.
And, what is APTA?
The American Public Transit Association. And every time, they probably won't even invite me back now because I'm speaking. Whenever I go there, I'm like speaking treason, right? Hey, why don't we have zero fare? But can I talk about that for a minute,
Yes,
Gina?
Please.
Look, it doesn't make any sense, all right? You're running an agency where the revenue is less than 10%, okay? How does that work, you know? So, and it's not even less than 10%. Let's say it's $8 million. That's what we get from the fare box, okay? And it's not really that number because it costs you $750,000 or whatever to collect it and, you know, put it where it goes, blah, blah, blah. It costs you money to maintain those fare boxes. We're staring down the barrel of a $10 or $11 million redo if we redo all the fare boxes. What do I want to do that for? And then here's the other point. Look, if Mrs. Johnson lives on Prospect with her two children and right now she pays $1.50 to go somewhere, $1.50 to come back, plus the kids or whatever, you're talking about $2,000 or better of money that could go back into her pocket. And if it goes back into her pocket, where's it going to go, Gina? It's not going to go out of the state. It's going to go right back into the economy, buying bread, formula, food, whatever. And that'll raise, you know, that obviously raises the sales tax and can get us, which we get a piece of anyway. So you're doing good for everybody, but in the same respect, you're changing people's lives. And them having the ability to get to work, to not have to worry about that dollar fit. And by the way, 85% of anything that happens on a bus, we have one of the safest public transit systems in the nation, okay? Less than 1%. Of all incidents out of 15, 16 million rides. That's pretty safe. So let's say, but out of that, 85% or better is a dispute over $1.50. So if we get the fare off the bus, it's safer. Okay.
Can I just jump in and say, like, so I am observing in person your passion for this topic. Oh. Is there like an origin story on that?
You know, I don't know. My whole life has changed since I lost my vision about 7 years ago. So I think that's where that all starts.
Will you tell that story?
No. I lost my vision 7 years ago. It's called ischemic optic neuropathy. You lose blood flow to your optic nerve. It happened in one eye. And when I went to the doctors and the Mayo Clinic and everything, they said, oh, don't, you know, that's bad, but don't worry about it. It only usually happens in one eye. Well, lucky me, it happened in my other eye. So I woke up one morning and I couldn't see. So there it is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess thinking about that as someone who works in transit, I wonder how you think that might shape your understanding of who is using transit and what they may need to get around town.
Yeah, it shaped my understanding of transit because, you know, when I got into the paratransit service, transit for folks with, I call it a diverse ability. I don't have a disability. I have a diverse ability, okay? But because of that, because of me getting thrown into that system, if you will, where I need help in a rideshare system or whatever, you know, you can look at numbers all day and it can say, oh, we have a on-time performance of this. So we have this. And you can cue those numbers to say that, yeah, everything's okay. Well, you know what? It wasn't okay. All right? Because I was in it.
Yeah. Will you describe what you experienced within it?
Well, it goes back to everything I said before about sandboxes and whatever. Before, 3.5-4 years ago, we didn't have a map of every piece of public transit in this region. And when you get to one border, it's another system. When you get to one border, it's a different cost. And from a paratransit standpoint, a diversability standpoint, I could go to, you know, I always tell the story, I could go to the courthouse in Independence or something, and then once I'm there, I'm stuck. I don't qualify for their service, so I can't get around. And I'm standing on the corner about crying, like, what do I do now? Okay, and that getting hit over the head with a hammer like that takes all those numbers you read on a sheet and throws them out the window because it doesn't matter, right? I could get to I'd have a meeting at the Nolte Center in Johnson County and the service couldn't get me there. I could get like a block or two away and then I'd have to call somebody to come pick me up. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Okay, so when you talk about passion, I mean, that's it. It's a passion for, you know, if I want to come here to this interview with you and, you know, I got to call 24 hours in advance and then I got a 30-minute window each side of when I may get picked up, I'm not going to, how am I supposed to compete? All right, I'm not looking for anything extra. I'm just looking to help level the playing field.
So that people can get where they need to go.
And add talent and value to where they can add talent and value. Okay, but if they can't access the system, if they can't use it, then what good?
You know, I know that the story of losing your vision is really hard to tell, and I appreciate that you've given us the beginning of that story, but can you help me understand a little bit better what it was like to try and navigate a life that you had built around being a seeing person, and then try to translate that life into suddenly not having vision?
Well, it stinks, okay? No, it's just, it's obviously very hard. You think of everything a different way, and, you know, I'll try and go there with you, but I'll start crying, so.
We'll take a break when that happens, okay?
So let's go the other way for just a second, all right? You know, you're either a boat anchor or sail. Pick one, right? So you can either take, and I'm not going through anything different than anybody else isn't going through. Everybody has, you know, their traumatic experience. Everybody has stuff happen to them, and it's just what you do with it, all right? So when I say boat anchor or sail, it was you go blind, and then all of a sudden you make that choice. Am I going to lay back in a fetal position and cry? Well, that didn't work. Or are you going to be a sail and get up and use it? Okay, if the Lord put this in my lap for a reason, then there it is. So make your reason. And I think that drives the passion that I do now. The difference, you want to know the difference? The difference is I say it all the time, I talk about perspective. Okay, I was that ambitious guy. Okay, I was that ambitious guy who I want a bigger house, I want a bigger car, I want to make more money, I want to do all this stuff. But if you only eat from that side of the plate, you're never going to get full. You got to eat from the other side of the plate, which is, what is it that feeds your soul? Find what that is, okay? Is it your job, your community, your church, your work, whatever that is? And this feeds my soul because I know I'm affecting people's lives. You know, I heard a TED Talk one time that was very, very interesting that talked about, you know, everybody knows what they do. Some people even know how they do it. But the question was, do you know why? Do you know why you do what you do? All right, and that's the question I like to ask down at the ATA now is, why do we do what we do? Well, we do it because we're affecting people's lives, and it's our job to help people, okay? And if you look at it from that perspective differently, then that's a good thing. I mean, I think it was Denzel Washington once. I was listening to a commencement speech he did where he said, you know, are you living for your resume or your eulogy, okay? When you live for your resume, then you're trying to climb over people, right? When you're living for your eulogy, what do you want people to say about you when you die, you know? Those are two different things, I would think.
Did this turning point in your life create a shift in that respect for you, or have you always been on the track of living for the eulogy rather than the resume?
Well, I think this just laser pointed right onto it. You know what I mean? I mean, I grew up in a family that was my father and mother were always giving back, and you know, Boy Scouts, and I learned a lot.
You told my producer yesterday that they were always taking in dogs, and I loved the idea that to you summarizes the family that you came from. Taking in dogs.
You know, we'd take in every stray, and my dad would fight a little bit, but you know, mom always won that one, and we'd always have four or five dogs in the house. So yeah, every time we found something, we brought it home.
And that, so for you, like this path that you're on, it's the same path, but blindness, like,
yeah, this
clarified
just
clarified it.
It crystallized it. Okay, it crystallized it. And what I'll tell you right now is honestly, I feel like I'm more blessed than anybody. And here's why I say that, because when I meet somebody, I don't judge them by the color of their skin. I don't judge them by what they look like. I don't judge them by the type of clothes they wear. I judge them by what I hear coming out of their mouth and what I feel in my heart and my gut. You know what kind of freedom that is, you know? And in my opinion, especially in these days, I think everybody should go blind for a month. You know what I mean? Maybe we'd all get a little perspective.
Robbie Mackinnon, stay with me, okay?
All right.
Robbie is the CEO of the KCATA. That's the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority. He came to this work from a background in social work. We'll hear more about that in just a minute. This is a portrait session on KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and my guest is Robbie Mackinnon, the fiery head of the KCATA. He's been navigating Kansas City without his vision since 2013, as we've just heard. And he comes to his work from a background not in transit, but in social work. So that also explains why, for him, it is about people, not vehicles. We're going to hear more about that now. Hi again, Robbie.
Hi.
Tell me about social work. How'd you get into it to begin with? What drew you to it?
First of all, you say fiery, and then you're over here making me cry. So,
well, fiery includes crying, I think. If not, I'm in trouble.
I'm sorry. Ask that again, please.
Tell me about social work. How'd you get into it?
Oh, how does anybody get into anything? I mean, my sister was working as a social worker with kids, and when she would come over and we would talk, and I would see how it, like I said earlier, how it feeds her soul, and it wasn't about the money for her. It was about the good and the bad, and how she would get so upset, but then so happy.
Upset and happy, thinking about outcomes for her clients.
Yeah, and it was just very intriguing. Okay, and so I started. I got a couple of jobs like that, and then I found. You know, I remember one time I was working in a boy's house, and you know, we'd be with the kids, and then a caseworker or somebody would come over and say, hey, you know, I'll just say Johnny as a name. Hey, Johnny, you got a visit from your mom coming up. And we knew that she wasn't going to show up, okay, because she never did. But yet Johnny would stand there all day.
And yeah, that still brings you to tears. And I know that crying on the air wasn't something you were eager to do, but I want to just affirm your willingness to do it, because we have a call from someone who we have not given out the phone number, okay? And we have received multiple calls from people wanting to share their thoughts about free bus ridership, wanting to thank you for what you're saying about your own personal experience, and you know, tweets with people sitting in their cars. So I want you to know that you are, what you're doing matters to people.
Good. Let's
right
talk
now.
About free transit.
We will. But I do want to keep talking to you about social work, because I want to connect the dots between that and what you do now. You came to your position that you have now. I understand your previous position was with Ozanam, working with kids and families.
Yeah, I worked with Ozanam. Then I worked for Jackson County, and got put on the board of the ATA. And that's how I ended up here. Yes.
When you think about what you're doing now, given where you thought you were headed into a career in social work. Now you run a transportation authority. What surprises you most about that?
Well, I think it surprised me at first, but then once I got into it and you adapt the kind of philosophy I'm talking about with it, it's a perfect fit, okay? And everything we do revolves around helping people, and I know I keep saying it all the time, but that's the best way to explain it. Look, perspective, I say this all the time, perspective is a beautiful thing, but nobody ever gets perspective until something traumatic happens in their life. Your wife comes home with a lump on her breast, your father has Alzheimer's, you lose your vision, whatever that may be, right? Then all of a sudden everybody gets perspective. My prayer to everybody is get it sooner. Okay, and here's my example of perspective. I used to go out in my garage, and it's, well, you know, I better keep this, better keep that, better keep this thing I haven't used in 5 years, but I better keep it. I go out there now, I don't need any of it, okay? None of it matters. All that matters is that my children and my family are happy and healthy. That's perspective. Okay. And if you can, like I said, find something, if you're lucky enough to find a job that feeds your soul and that can help other people, why wouldn't you do that? Why do you get up in the morning? And why should anybody care? Right.
You know, you have been in the role you do for a few years, and the problems you're solving in the work are largely ones you inherited. And with all the perspective in the world, I still wonder what that's like to try and untangle knots that have been tied very slowly over the course of decades in Kansas City for all kinds of reasons.
Look, I'm not doing anything different than our mayor has to do, or that Mayor James had to do, or that anybody in any other, you know, position gets put in. And trust me, I create enough problems of my own. I'm pretty good at that too. So on the other side. But, you know, if at the end of the day you can put your head on a pillow and go, you know what, I'm going the right way. It's the right thing. I feel good about it. And wake up feeling the same way, then I think we're ahead of the game.
We've been talking about your background in social work, and I wonder just how you define social work. What does that mean?
Well, most of my background is with children, and then children and families. But I don't know necessarily that social work is the right word. Okay, it's social justice. It's social currency. It's you know, you can talk about economic development. Well, there's social development that comes with that too. And to me, they're two sides of the same coin. You can't have one without the other. And what is that one thing that can connect both of those things? Access, right? Access.
Can you explain that a little more?
Well, access as in workforce access, access to healthcare, all the access that we're trying to piece together from a comprehensive transit plan that allows people options and access to the service. It's not just about ridership, okay? Ridership is a byproduct to me. If you have the right service, and you have options for people, the ridership will come. So I think the metrics themselves when it comes to public transit have to be changed, not from that old buggy whip way of thinking to what's really important. That makes sense?
It does. You know, when you say access, it occurs to me that in part you mean that's the point of connection between the larger system and the individual.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not just the answer is not just a streetcar. The answer is not just a 40-foot bus going down the street. It's you as a transit authority acting like a transit authority, not a bus company, and trying to help connect the dots, as you just said about me, connecting the dots and being innovative to where you can bring other things to the table by using, you know, Bike Walk KC, which is a wonderful group, by using Tom Guerin and the Streetcar Authority that are doing a wonderful job exceeding expectations, by using the folks at the ATA from the bus service, and then public-private partnerships with Transloc and Transdev and Bill George and folks like that who are all getting together on the same page to provide this one menu, if you will, that you don't have to worry about, well, it's this service, it's that service, it's whatever. You just get to pick from it. Now, that would be a beautiful place to be.
You know, so I called you fiery earlier, and you called me on it. And I'm going to say something, which is that I come from a long line of fiery people, so I do not consider that an insult. And I am curious, listening to you talk, hearing your passion, whether that has always been a word or, you know, whatever synonym you like, but has that always been you?
Yeah, I think so. But again, you know, your life gets turned totally upside down when you lose your vision or when something else traumatic happens to anybody else. And the ability to have that crystallize in your head so that, I guess, good way of saying it would be so that now you use your powers for good instead of evil. You know what I mean? Is a good way to put it.
When did you use your powers for evil?
See, I knew you were going to ask me that. Stop it. Just being a kid the way I've always been a kid, you know, just like everybody else. But I'm feel like this is the right way to go. I feel it in my heart. I feel it in my gut, and I feel it in the people that we talk to about it. And maybe, you know, it takes a lot of good to overcome a little bit of evil. You know what I mean? And with the people I talk to and the people I get to work with everybody every day, Gwen Grant from the Urban League, the mayor, the city council, and you know, Heather Hall, who Councilwoman Hall, who brought in the Veterans Community Project and started this whole process about the free veterans rights. Councilman Lucas, when he was councilman, about school kids and high school kids getting access. You know, everybody adding a little piece so that when we get this thing done and we get it baked, it'll be something very special. And it's not just one guy's idea. It's everybody's coming together finally for the right reasons and coming out with something that's really fantastic.
So I guess I wonder whether you ever miss social work or if you think you're still doing it.
I do it right now, okay? I absolutely do it right now. And again, you know, social work, call it whatever you want. But just the fact that I have the opportunity to reach out, not only from an agency standpoint, but an individual standpoint, with our actual employees, with just going out and talking to people, when you just go sit at a stop one day and get to talk to people and see, get that real experience about what they're going through and not just, again, what you're reading on a piece of paper, which I can't read now anyway, so I don't care, and hearing it firsthand from the people that need it the most.
When you do sort of go to meetings and go to conventions or sit on panels, what is your sense of how many of the other people in those meetings and panels have been bus riders in Kansas City themselves?
Well, we usually ask that question, and, you know, it's a joke because you say, raise your hand, and I can't count you anyway, but, you know, but there's a lot of that, okay? And I think it's fascinating, and it's across the board from north to south, and, you know, I just really enjoy my job. Do you know what that, you know what that feels like? You obviously, I can tell you really enjoy being here and doing this kind of thing and making people like me cry.
I love making people cry, yeah. I do.
But, you know, that enjoyment is, I just hope everybody can have that.
My question, though, about that has to do with your experience as someone who does actually ride the bus.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you run a transit agency, why the heck wouldn't you know the service you're using? You know what I mean? Like I said, you get these old school type of thinking where I talk to people at a national from other transit agencies and wonder, well, do you actually use public transit? No. Well, then how do you know what people need or don't need? You know what I mean? We're in the middle of a system-wide redesign right now. And this system hasn't been looked at since Jesus was a baby or whatever. And we have got to start adapting to the next 20 years, not the last 50. So it's kind of a three-pronged approach, if you will. So it's not just, again, one guy saying, hey, transit should be zero fare. It's everybody working toward three different goals. One goal is to get your own agency's finances in order, okay? Every time we pick up a rock down there, there's another snake under it. And rather than just putting the rock down, now we're going to cut the head off and keep moving forward. It's that. It's the redesign of the system itself so that, you know, you don't have... I like to say our system had been politically engineered over the years, which means councilperson so-and-so, commissioner so-and-so, or whoever said, hey, I need a route here, I need a route there. And all of a sudden you got a 40-foot bus carrying, you know, four people. Okay, I could send a limo to your house for that. It's ridiculous. Our top 15 routes carry 75% of our people. Our bottom 15, two. That's ridiculous. Okay, and that is unacceptable. So when you can talk about zero fare, which is a great place to go, but it doesn't work if you don't get your other ducks in a row too.
So, as someone who rides the bus, can you tell me like your favorite bus riding moments? I don't want to diminish any of the critique, but I have ridden the bus too, and I've had my fair share of frustrations. But I also think that for Kansas Cityans who have not been bus riders, they might not know that there is another side of it. And I'm curious about what you've experienced
well,
on the other side.
Here's why that is. Because you get to a point where an incident happens on a bus, and obviously we tape stuff. You know, you got a tape that so the media can come down and grab that tape, throw it on the air, and go, oh, look, violence. You know, when in all reality... it's under 1% of any. We have one of the safest public transit systems in the nation. And the beautiful part of that, Gina, is our operators. Our operators are salt of the earth ambassadors. They go so far above and beyond just working, okay? I can tell you 100 stories about operators who have stopped the bus to get off to help somebody who fell off a bike or in the snow their wheelchair turned over when they didn't have to do that, okay? They just do it because they're good people and they want to help people. That one time we had this little girl that was dropped off from a public school bus, and she was dropped off at a stop. Well, the weird thing is where they dropped her off, she didn't live there anymore. That was her old house. And our operator saw that and said, wait a minute, something's wrong. Felt something in her heart, in her gut that said something's wrong. And she told everybody, I'm going to stop and take care of this. Well, okay, what would have happened to that little girl? You know, as far as I'm concerned, our operator saved her life. I've had operators who... okay, I 150 different stories, and I'd love to sit here for an hour and talk about that because they're amazing people, they're great ambassadors, and they know the folks, it's a community.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue the conversation we had with Robbie Mackinnon of the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority back in August, when free rides on Metro buses was still a pipe dream. Now, of course, that idea is becoming a reality. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and today we're listening back to one of our favorite conversations from 2019, a portrait session with Robbie Mackinnon, head of the KCATA. We're hearing his story from an early career in social work to a medical condition in 2013 that left him blind, and the way it changed his direction. Hi again, Robbie.
Hi, thanks.
So you've got a new app, and I think that that's a big part of what you've been working toward for a while, right?
Yeah, actually, it's probably a couple, but the end game is to be able to allow you to have access to everything. Right now, we have an app for Ride KC Freedom on Demand, which is our paratransit service that, you know, it's kind of an Uber-like service for public transit, but we also have an app that you can use to, you know, find out where your bus is, where the streetcar is.
I want to back up on the paratransit service. Mm-hmm. You said it's like Uber or whatever, but for public transit. Can you explain what that means?
One of the things I'm most proud of is how we have revamped our service for folks with diverse abilities. Right now, folks with diverse abilities can ride public transit, can ride fixed route for free. Now, they still can use the old share fare service if they want to, but then we invented, if you will, this on-demand service. It's Ride KC Freedom. You download the app and you can get a ride just like an Uber ride. And here, the fun part about that is that now I get the same service you get, Gina. I don't have to take a special deal if I don't need to. I get the same service you get. So leveling that playing field, I think, is a really big deal. And with those three different options for folks with diverse abilities, that's very innovative nationally.
You also started, as you've mentioned, this free ridership for veterans that's been going on for a while now. Can you talk about the idea behind that and what it took to push that through?
Well, it took we were very lucky. We talked to the fantastic Veterans Community Project, the Tiny Houses folks. No matter what it is, no matter what safety net type program that somebody's running, I guarantee you transit and access to transit, public transit, is one of the top three. And it's either public transit is either the biggest barrier or, you know, the biggest asset. We just got to pick which side we want to be on. And that's kind of where it comes to the zero fare stuff. And what kind of here's what everybody's going to tell you, right? You make transit free and all of a sudden the gang's in New York and there's hordes of people, right? And so I want to say back, I'm going to go, really? So what you're telling me is that the only thing that's keeping the wolves at the gate right now is $1.50. We eliminate the $1.50 and all of a sudden it's mass chaos, cats living with dogs, whatever. Please. Okay. And let's talk about security for just a second. Okay. Do we want more guns on a bus? No. Do I want to hire security guards with guns? No, I don't. We actually did a level 5 survey. Level 5 came in and did a survey, a deep dive with our customers. You know what? Our customers feel safer when the bus is full, rather than if there's a police officer on the bus. Our customers feel safer if there's like a yellow shirt from downtown council CID or Main Corps or the red shirts and supervisors from the ATA actually on the bus. So let's try this instead. Let's go the opposite way. Rather than putting more officers with guns on the bus, rather than taking a 40-foot bus and trying to turn it into a B-52 flying fortress with gun turrets on it, why don't we go the other way? And the other way is, you know, you're offering zero fare for safety net providers, so let's get those mental health professionals. Let's get them to, as your payback, if you will, for that free service, help us out and put some folks on the bus with resources, with as ambassadors, as, you know, it's just, it makes common sense, right?
So can you talk about what it is about a full bus that feels safer?
Just more eyes. Look, I remember when Chief Forte was the chief of police, and he handed me a report that said that when you, from a year before to a year after Truce Max went in, a year before Truce Max went in to a year after, crime went down 20%. Now, why is that? Well, it's now more lighting, more stops, more people, more eyes on, more whatever, and it makes a difference. And that's exactly what we want to do on a Prospect Corridor, Independence Avenue, anywhere throughout the region. I just think it adds value. And, you know, crime isn't a transit issue. It's a community issue. And you have got to get out of your comfort zone and think and take the blinders off and quit thinking that this is somebody else's problem. Right? We're trying to do our Prospect Next now. We just want to do that, put a bus on the street and go, oh, anything that happens, that's the city's problem. That's the police department's problem. No, it's not. It's all of our problem. Okay? So get in the boat and row. You know, and if we all work on this stuff together, there's amazing things that we can do. And what Mayor Lucas and I and the members of the council are trying to do with this zero fare thing is not just some crazy pie in the sky idea. Okay. And it adds the whole security aspect. It adds the old access aspect. It brings all of those pieces together.
When you earlier were talking about that right now, the top 15% of the bus routes were serving like some huge proportion of the bus ridership, whereas the bottom 15 were serving only 2%, and that doesn't work. Can you explain what isn't working there and how you're essentially saying that bottom 15%, when you described the buses that people don't feel safe on, where there are just like two people on the bus, that's what you're describing, right?
Well, that's part of it. But the other thing is you have to make those decisions. Do you want coverage or efficiency? Right. And we have such a huge region here to cover.
And a sprawling one, like not dense.
Right. And that's the point. So if you've got 40-foot buses out on those lower routes, you're taking away the service and the value that you can add in your more popular routes and what we need, for example, in the urban core. What we had to get away from is thinking that of the cookie cutter mentality that what works in downtown Kansas City works north of the river. What works north of the river works because it doesn't. Okay?
What are the different needs, for example, of those two communities?
Well, we need more service and east and west service downtown here. And north of the river, if we can pull those 40-footers back and we can concentrate more on job access, if we can take the North Oak and up 29, if we can take the buses that we actually need there because of capacity and then surround them with with microtransit. We're doing microtransit in Johnson County, and they're very innovative, and Josh and Penny and the folks in Johnson County Transit are doing a fantastic job with this. We had over 16,000 trips, and that's where it works. So you can get rid of some of the routes in Johnson County, but keep the ones that are actually being used and heavy and surround them with these innovative services. Again, now you've created options. Now you've created the safety issue. You've brought all of it together.
When you talk about coverage and efficiency, I guess my question there comes in when you're trying to marry those things, but then thinking about like, okay, so of course the bus that almost no one rides, maybe that line doesn't need to keep going. But what about the one person who did rely on that bus? Like that one person who's sort of stranded now, maybe.
Well, not stranded. You know what, Gina? We would all like to have public transit come to our front door, pick us up, and take us somewhere.
For okay? sure, I would love that.
But reality says that's not going to happen, okay? So that's part of the reason we go through the redesign. That's part of the reason we reach out to the public and say, hey, what's important to you? And see what we can come up with. Now, the whole point of when you say there's, well, yes, because those one or two people are just as important as anybody else to us. So if we can design services with different innovative approaches, that's not just the same standard, you know, we got 40-foot buses on every street in the region here, then that's the direction we have to go. And we need our customers' help in helping design that.
What do you think is the biggest challenge as you try to design that?
Apathy. I think the big challenge is you try and get, you know, we had 2,700 people take the survey and grateful for that. And that's probably more than some of the professional thought we would get. But to me, you know, when you're talking about 15 million boardings a year, get involved, okay? Get involved in the process. You can go to a city hall council meeting or a county meeting or a ATA meeting, and they're passing around millions of dollars and there's nobody in the room. But yet once the decision is made, then everybody's going to come back and, you know, get in line and say you made the bad choice and whatever that is. Well, get involved, you know, get involved on the front end.
What are the opportunities to get involved for people who just aren't aware of, like, the opportunities out there to be heard?
Well, opportunities like this, and I'm grateful that you guys allow me to come in here and talk like this. Obviously, going onto websites and letting the folks know exactly what you're thinking, calling in, taking our surveys. We're going out for a couple more customer surveys, if you will. And when somebody comes by and wants to ask you a question about it, take 30 seconds and give us your thoughts, because it's important to us.
What about people who don't use public transit now but would like to and have some reason, something that's stopping them? How do they respond to the survey?
Well, we have. And when I talk about those 2,700, I'm talking about people that don't necessarily use public transit who have been taking that. So we want to hear from them, too. But let me go a little deeper into that, if I could. You may not use public transit, okay? But you depend on 100 people a day who do from, name it, okay? I guarantee if we went through your day right now, I could tell you and show you folks that you depend on for everything you do every day who use public transit. So it's not just a ride issue, a ridership, a rider issue. It's a community issue.
So I referred to some of the calls we'd received earlier, and I think now that I've invited people, they're scared maybe, but Pastor Blunt was one of our callers earlier, and he called to say that he wanted to thank you. He is also blind, and he said that he woke up this morning. He went blind at 54. He's now 70. He's worked in a jail as a chaplain, and he wants you to know that he is opening his sales today.
Pastor, good for you. All right. And if there were more people like you trying to make a difference like that, this world would be a much better place. Thank you very much for your service.
We also have Sharon from Kansas City, who called before I gave the number, to say that she supports buses, but that the scheduling right now does not allow flexibility. Some have 1 hour waits, and that she wants free fare figured out after the scheduling issues are figured out.
And you know
what?
She's absolutely right. Okay, and that's why when we talk about the actual redesign as a part of this, it's absolutely critical. You're right, because this city adapts, this city changes, but yet the bus service didn't. You get what I mean? We're still using the same model that we used back 20, 30 years ago, and so she's absolutely correct. It's not just the one thing of saying, hey, fares are zero now, everybody should be happy. No, if fares are zero and you got a rotten system that's ineffective and inefficient, what was the point? Okay, so she's absolutely right. All those things need to be pieced together, and that's the way we're looking at it.
It seems like her concern might be that by removing fare, that you're maybe removing some of the resources to solve that problem. Is that a misconception?
That is absolutely a misconception, because we have been budgeting now, for what we've been budgeting for. Okay, what we're talking about is the possibility of getting funding that was allocated from a half-cent sales tax that's been, reassigned other places. And if we can get that back to the ATE, that would be... So I'm not asking, we're not trying to ask the city to go out and dig in the couches and find more. We're just asking for what was supposed to be there. So no, it will not take away. And when we do the redesign, if you pull a route... you're just taking that and assigning it down to another a place that we need it, but that doesn't mean we're taking the service away. It's a zero-sum game, right? We're just moving around the assets.
It does not sound to me like you have clearly articulated your own criticisms of the system as it exists right now, of the transit system in Kansas City. There is a kind of culture in Kansas City of reflexive, like dogging of the transit system altogether, like public transit here. People say it's non-existent. People say, people say all kinds of things. Does that get to you?
Yeah, it really makes me angry. I didn't want to have to somebody blank me out there for just a second. Your producer. you're absolutely right, it does. I was actually on a phone call the other day with somebody telling me that, and Eric Rogers with Bike Walk KC, he can tell you about a meeting he went to, but it's the same principle. It's the principle of, if we have more public transit, there'll be more of bus people. What are you trying to say by that? You know what I mean? While everybody else is trying to run away from the people that need us the most, like I always say, we're going to run toward them.
And Robbie, we have to go now, but thank you so much. Robbie Mackinnon is CEO of the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority. And thank you so much for sharing your story and talking about transit.
Thank you, ma'am, very much.
We talked to Robbie Mackinnon last August when free bus ridership was still a dream. Now it's a reality. We're spending the holidays listening back to some of our favorite conversations from 2019. Central Standard is produced by Melody Rowell, Mackenzie Martin, Noah Taborda, and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next.